with the Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
All right, we are still trying to get Anthony Reich on the line. Whilst we do that, let's take a look at the answer to the sports question. Louis Karpus wanted to know from us his sports question this morning. How many league goals did Bobby Charlton score for Man United? Taking a look at some of your answers, Karen says 249 goals. Unsigned says 11 goals, and sorry, just going back, more than 100 says Colin S, and David Zimmerman says 249. The answer that I have is 199. That is the answer that Louis Karpus has given me. We are apparently struggling to get hold of Anthony Reich. We'll get to him in just a minute. All right, some other messages talking a little bit more about the Trump situation. Janine says that people are saying that that America has got to get on with urgent and serious business. What have the Democrats been doing for the last 4 years? They've been vilifying Trump, demonizing him, and they haven't focused on what America needs. Would you agree with that? And how do you think this should be played out now? I understand everybody's consternation, and I do understand frustration with the Democrats, but what do you suggest that they should be doing now? All right, I'd love your thoughts on that. Business Insider reporting this morning that Facebook sees a $34 billion erased from the market cap as Trump ban fallout continues to spook tech investors. And I do think that something we need to talk about is how the technology companies are being viewed and in terms of their behavior. Anthony Reich, good morning. Apparently we have got you now. How are you?
Boker Tov, Howard. Yeah, sorry about the delay, some technical bugs, but I'm with you. And I just wanted to start out by talking about the weather, because we haven't spoken about the weather for some time. We're in winter. This is our rainy season. We started out having a lot of rain in November. There were some threats about opening the sluice gates and the Dagania Dam to allow water to flow down the Jordan River from the Kinneret for the first time in a number of decades. Practices were being made, preparations to open the dam, the wall, and then dry. And then we've had kind of really, really amazing, sunny, warm, pleasant weather to be outside, but no signs of rain. There are threats of rain for later this week, but it's amazing how we started the winter so wet and all of a sudden things have dried up so dramatically. But that also brings us to an interesting story about Mekorot, the local Israeli water company that signed an agreement in Bahrain to produce desalinated water in Bahrain. So that's going to be an interesting one to watch, how Israeli technology is brought to bear to allow the Gulf countries also to have the water advantage that we so fortunately have in this country.
Amazing. It's just incredible what we are seeing happening in the region. All right, let's talk about the political landscape changing noticeably in Israel as we head up to a March election. So what are the main changes that have taken place?
Well, we see the rise of new parties and actually the destruction of old parties. I mean, what we're going to see in the coming election bears almost no resemblance to what we saw in the last election in terms of the way that the parties are constructed and also the way that the number of seats are going to be divided up. I mean, this is going to be a very, very fascinating election. I know we are very election weary. We've had more than our fair share of elections over the last year or two. And yet there is a certain element of fascination about the upcoming election because of the differences. The first thing we have is, of course, Gideon Saar, who broke away from the Likud, formed this party, which is called Tikva Chadasha, New Hope. That's really what it's about. He seems to have managed to get quite a lot of support, both in terms of people breaking away from the Likud. Ze'ev Elkin, for example, was also one of the Likud stalwarts who decided to break away from the Likud and join him. A number of other quite well-known personalities who've been within the political spectrum for a while decided to join him in the hope that he could potentially be the next prime minister. This is a party that's really been set up to offer an alternative to Prime Minister, a real alternative, a credible alternative to Prime Minister Netanyahu, and a number of people are joining. And I think that the electorate are looking at it as a Likud alternative. I mean, this seems to be a Likud party in all but name without Prime Minister Netanyahu at the leadership. So to try and get away from the whole party politics that is so inherent within the Likud, you've got, you know, these grassroots Likud supporters who would never, ever dream of voting for anybody other than Prime Minister Netanyahu. He's already done away with Likud primaries. There will be no primaries this time around again. No election manifesto really to speak from the Likud. A certain arrogance, I suppose, we're seeing coming through, which may well serve to weaken the Prime Minister's position as we move forward to the next election. In fact, a lot of the opinion polls are suggesting that there's enough in the anti-Netanyahu camp now to potentially form an alternative government and sideline the Likud and the Prime Minister at the same time, and also potentially sideline the ultra-Orthodox parties. And perhaps we'll speak a little bit more about that in a moment. Mm. But Gideon Saar is certainly being touted as the guy who potentially could challenge the Prime Minister for his seat in the Prime Minister's office. We also have a new party in the form of a current Tel Aviv mayor, Ron Huldai, who has formed a party called Hayisraelim, the Israelis. What a name for a party. Who else would be members of that party if it wasn't for Israelis? I'm not quite sure what it's exactly supposed to signify. But yeah, he's certainly on the left side of the political spectrum. And he's also got quite a few well-known personalities who've joined his party. I don't think that he's going to be quite as successful as the Gideon Saar grouping. And in fact, what I'd like to add about the Gideon Saar grouping for a moment is that the moment we see the Likud decide to dispose of Prime Minister Netanyahu as his leader, as their leader, it would not shock me in the least if the Gideon Saar group reintegrated at some point in the future with the Likud and he became then the de facto leader of the Likud, because he is really a Likudnik dyed in the wool. And it seems to be strange that he would not be part of the Likud going forward. But I think it's all about trying to break the stranglehold that Netanyahu has on the Likud. In addition to those new parties being formed, we're also seeing the destruction of some of the existing parties. The Kahol Lavan party seems to be decimated, people leaving to go to other parties. It seems as if that they will not be a factor in the upcoming election, in spite of the fact that, as things stand at the moment, Benny Gantz still remains on track, if we get there, to take over the Prime Minister's position in November, assuming that we go through this election and the government cannot be formed in that strange situation, then Benny Gantz would effectively become Prime Minister later this year. But I think that he's going to perform quite poorly in the upcoming election. We're also seeing the Yamina party somewhat being decimated, a break between Smotrich and between Naftali Bennett. They are breaking away. The Labour Party is not a factor. They are very unlikely even to get any seats in the upcoming Knesset at all, if we believe what the opinion polls are saying. So really all change at the moment in Israeli politics, and I think that we're going to have some new names there. The real question on everybody's lips is the electorate going to turn out in a way that will allow a government to be formed that will exclude the Likud and then by definition exclude ultra-Orthodox parties, because it seems as if though they will kind of go together. The ultra-Orthodox parties have already sensed what's going on in the background and have already made it clear that they might be open to the possibility of joining an alternative government, even if it's not the Likud. Nobody was surprised by that particular statement, but it seems as if though they at the moment are very much linked to the Likud, and therefore anybody else forming a government would try to do so without the involvement of the ultra-Orthodox parties if they can. So I think there are some interesting things going on, even though elections is not what we wanted to talk about this year. But I think there are some interesting changes which will make this election a little different from the previous ones.
Mm. There's no doubt that Netanyahu is a political maestro and survivor. The speech that he made last week about and the way he's performed around or he's managed the vaccine process compared to how Israel managed COVID before certainly must work in his favor. Does Gideon Saar actually have a chance of unseating him?
I think that Gideon Saar has a seat of unseating him. I saw in one of this morning's newspapers, Netanyahu is getting an A for vaccinations and an F for managing the pandemic. So I think that there are a lot of people who consider that this vaccination program might be the rabbit that he pulls out of the hat in order to get through the next election. But I think that there's sufficient now of a groundswell of anti-Netanyahu feeling. We see it every week on a Saturday evening where people continue to turn out to demonstrate against the prime minister on bridges that are over the highways, on public junctions outside the prime minister's residence in Tel Aviv. There is still a groundswell of people who really would do almost anything to get rid of Netanyahu from the prime minister's residence. And it seems to me that the vaccination program, even though it's going well at the moment and we expect that it'll continue to go well, I'm not sure that that now is going to be enough for him. I mean, he may well pull something very magical out of the hat and somehow squeak through. What happened last time around was that he found it very, very difficult to form a government. It was really a major effort for him, and he had to make major concessions in order to get a government formed. I think this time around it's going to be even more difficult than that. So if we take that as a milestone, as a marker in terms of what, you know, might happen, I think that this time around, I think he's probably going to get less support. But only time will tell, and between now and March is a long time, particularly in this Jewish country.
Absolutely. But a number of events, and you referred to this a little bit earlier, a number of events have taken place over the last few days that serve to emphasize the a bigger increase in the divide between religious and secular Israelis. Tell us about this.
This is a long discussion that I would welcome the opportunity to hold at some point about the Jewish nature of our state. What is important to us in terms of being Jews and running a Jewish country, and what is important to us in terms of upholding people's right to choose? There are Jews in this country who are not religious, who have the right to do things in a secular way. And the question is, to what extent can we impose upon those people a certain Jewish nature about this country, which they do not welcome? That's a long discussion, and of course the ultra-Orthodox community is very much part of that discussion, because they are much inclined to impose their views on the rest of the country simply in the name of a Jewish country, simply in the name of upholding Jewish values and being true to our Jewish ideals and history. Not willing to change, just want to go with what has traditionally been our Jewish heritage. But yesterday, for example, we saw some very unpleasant scenes in the port city of Ashdod, when the police were sent in to break up classes and meetings, shiurim that were going at the yeshiva in Ashdod. Now, all educational institutions have been closed down by law due to the current corona lockdown. And yet some of those religious institutions feel that they have the right to operate above the law in the interests of promoting Jewish learning and being true to our Jewish ideals. And the moment those police come in and say, the law is the law and these shiurim and these classes need to stop, then of course the people start to invoke Nazi, because this is almost like, apparently according to the way that they interpret things, this is almost like what the Nazis would have done back in the days of the Shoah to break up
Jewish learning and to break up Jewish tradition. They wanted everybody to survive, the Nazis.
And so this is their way of surviving. We get together and we study and we learn Torah and we have shiurim, even though it presents a danger to life and limb, which seems to go against all the ideals that we have Everything that the Torah stands for and the Halakha stands for and Jewish thought stands for. And so that was one thing that was really unpleasant. And by the way, Ashdod was not the only place where this was going on. Apparently in Jerusalem, there was a Sheva Brachot on Saturday evening involving thousands of people, the grandson of one of the grand rabbis of one of those local neighborhoods, and also classes at Yeshivot and Kolalim and things like that, which are really against the law. And so the moment the state has to send in police in order to try to enforce the law, then it becomes very, very unpleasant, and then the whole Nazi terminology is thrown out. So that's just the first thing. The second thing was a very strange court case. Our high court had to meet in order to decide whether certain foodstuffs are legal to bring into hospital during the course of 1 week in the year. And of course, I refer to Pesach. That 1 week is Pesach. And the High Court had to decide whether the ultra-Orthodox community could impose upon visitors to the hospital the need to bring only food that is kosher for Pesach while coming to visit people in that hospital. Now, the High Court on this occasion decided to throw that out and decided that it was not legal for the ultra-Orthodox community to determine what foodstuffs people can or cannot bring into the hospital. But it just shows this growing divide, with some people feeling that the right to choose is more important than having to adhere to traditions and practices and halachot that other people are following. So unfortunately, we don't have a lot more time to talk about this right now, but I think it's a much, much bigger discussion, which we, you know, absolutely, we may want to hold.
And I'm going to invite people to please send us your messages around this. Let's continue this discussion if we can tomorrow. And I would love your thoughts on it. The nature of the religious nature of the state and how the different ideals maybe can be accommodated. Anthony Reich, thank you as always.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.